Today is July 29th, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mag Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. Hey, I selected the wrong pop-down menu last week, and guess what? You didn't get the show. I only realized the severity of my failure last Thursday, and the show finally went out, but I apologize for the delay for all those of you who were subscribed to the show and don't necessarily find the article up. The article went up on Sunday. That's why I thought I'd posted it, or on Saturday. But it didn't go out on the feed until Thursday. So can I ever make it up to you? I'll assume you've forgiven me. To get the full story on anything we cover in the show, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. This week, it's iTunes on top. This crazy guy Melvin once told me it's good to be the king. Amazon.com's video store, which will include movie downloads, is expected to open before the end of August. Amazon plans to offer movies on VHS and DVD, along with ad-free digital versions of TV shows and feature-length movies. Users can choose from a monthly subscription service or an a la carte service. I mentioned that story because it was the only one we carried this week that suggests Apple is receiving any heat from anyone in the digital media marketplace. We did, however, carry plenty of news that, implicitly or otherwise, is good news for iTunes, including analyst comments saying that Microsoft's upcoming music service is doomed, or likely to flounder, or at least of unremarkable character. Anyway, Microsoft's announcement that it is developing its own portable music player and download service came as a shock to many of the companies that already make products based on Microsoft's technologies. Now, some of those companies are considering dropping Microsoft's platform called Plays for Sure. Plays for Sure is a marketing certification that companies can license from Microsoft to show that their products are compatible with the company's digital rights management technology and file formats. That would be Windows Media. The money these companies pay to Microsoft, now seen as a competitor instead of a partner, or perhaps in addition to a partner, amounts to salt in the wound, you might begin to believe. MP3 player makers like Creative, ScanDisk, and iRiver are being left to fend for themselves as Microsoft prepares to take on Apple's iTunes plus iPod juggernaut. I guess it's iPod and iTunes. From Microsoft's perspective, going out on its own probably has the best chances for success, since it can build a tightly integrated player and platform software and an online service, much like Apple has already done. Now, my favorite comment on this subject came from one of our readers, Tiger, who said, "Picture this. Day one, Zune arrives." Zune is the name of Microsoft's service to be, by the way. "Day one, Zune arrives. It's MS only, closed beyond closed." Now picture this. Day two, Apple licenses Fairplay to ScanDisk, iRiver, and Sony. Game over. MS is out millions, if not billions, in potential lost sales. Well, Tiger, it's a nice picture, because if Apple's ever going to license Fairplay, that's the time to do it. I agree with that. But it won't, because right now it makes money selling iPods. That might change in the future, but right now that's the way it is. And by the way, there's the fact that Steve Jobs is obsessed with controlling the whole widget, as he says. That's actually reason number one, and the whole money thing appears to be reason number two. Seriously, I think that's actually true. I do, however, have a suggestion for ScanDisk, Creative, Sony, iRiver. I'll get to that in the context machine. A couple other quick positive news items for iTunes. You talk about brand value and mind share. Well, 22Moo is designing an iTunes kiosk dubbed the Pod Buffet. It's being designed around an Intel-based Mac Mini with a 15-inch touchscreen. 22Moo hopes the kiosks will end up in airports, train stations, and hotels, and shopping centers, so that iPod owners can download music even when they're away from their computer. And as yet, there is no scheduled release date for the product. Here's another one. Social directory site Facebook on Tuesday announced a back-to-school promotion in which it will give away 10 million 25-song samplers from the iTunes Music Store. 1 million songs or samplers will be given away each week for the next 10 weeks. Each sampler will feature songs from a variety of genres, including alternative, rock, hip-hop, and electronica. EMI is getting ready to release a new version of the Beach Boys' seminal album Pet Sounds that will be available as an exclusive release through the iTunes Music Store for 4 weeks before becoming widely available. It'll go on sale on August 28th. And here's my favorite story of positive iTunes news that's on this list. Metallica, one of the most prominent holdouts in the online digital music sales arena, finally relented on Tuesday and added its catalog to the iTunes Music Store. Each of the band's first four albums include a pair of previously unreleased bonus tracks from a 1989 concert that it performed in Seattle. Metallica was one of the first bands to complain about Napster when the site was a peer-to-peer file sharing company back in the day. The band complained that it was losing royalties because users were sharing its music that way. And at one point, drummer Lars Ulrich delivered to Napster's offices a box containing a printout of every Napster user who had shared Metallica music, demanding that all of them have their accounts shut down. On an unrelated note, before we move into the context machine, Adam Engst of Tidbits tells or feels that there is a glaring omission in the Mac software's arsenal, a collaborative group document editing and management system that works on a network or through the internet and on an isolated Mac as well. The need for this application, dubbed Group Edit, as Mr. Engst has been calling it, is so great that he's looking for someone to write it. I just like the fact that he's speaking up. That's why I'm talking about it here. Mr. Engst, along with Macworld's editorial director Jason Snell, have put together an RFP, I believe that's Request for Product, and are willing to pay for the product's development. The RFP is available online, and they're actively looking for proposals now. And finally, Intel on Thursday officially introduced its new Core 2 Duo processor, which on this show we've been calling by its development code name Conroe. The Core 2 Duo is widely expected to find its way into the Intel-based PowerMac successor that Apple will likely announce at next month's Worldwide Developers Conference, or WWDC. The Core 2 Duo ranges from 1.9 gigahertz to 2.9 gigahertz. There's also a mobile version aimed at laptops. It's not clear whether or not Apple will use it in the MacBook Pro. And by the way, there is one other processor codenamed Woodcrest that's also a possible pick for the Mac Pro. So don't tell me I don't hedge my predictions. All right, so back on the show this week, Jeff Gamet, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back on. It's always a blast to be here.
Let's jump right into it. iTunes had a very good week, and it's kind of the overarching theme of this particular show. Some of the stuff that went on, we reported a lot of bad news from Microsoft, particularly analyst comments talking about how Zune, their music service that's supposed to be coming out in a little bit, was at a long uphill road to climb, and some other pessimistic news. Is it just me, or in reading the press stories, all of the realities of iTunes being out in front of its competition and all of the realities about iPod being in front of its competition, is it just me, or does the press just kind of like the iPod and iTunes?
I think right now the press really does like the iPod and iTunes. And, of course, remember, the media is very fickle, so who's to say what their favorite will be next week?
Now, it is really interesting to me. I mean, in the past, when you read stuff about Microsoft getting into a business, the press tends to take Microsoft very seriously. If Microsoft says, we're going to do this, we're going to get involved in this, they tend to take them seriously, presumably because of their history of getting really involved in certain marketplaces and very often taking them over.
Right.
This time, I mean, there was a guy from Wired that basically said Zune is going to completely fall apart. The wheels are just going to come off. I'm really surprised to see this much aggressive negative commentary when no one's ever seen the product before. What do you think about that?
I think that there's a lot of people out there that really don't have confidence in Microsoft when it comes to the whole digital music market. I don't think people really think Microsoft can pull it off.
Now, what reasons do we have to believe that that's the case?
Well, let's look at the last 5 years. Microsoft has a really consistent track record when it comes to trying to dethrone the iPod. They've released a lot of technology and a lot of licensing schemes, and a lot of companies have bought into it, but no one has been able to match that magic combination that Apple has. And it shows. I mean, there's a reason why the iPod is the dominant music player worldwide. And I think that there's a lot of analysts and media experts out there that are looking at the writing on the wall, and they're thinking, Microsoft just, they can't do this. This is out of their league.
Now, we're talking about the track record for the music industry. Very briefly, talking about Microsoft's track record generally in markets when it was doing battle with someone else. Not talking about quality of product now, just talking about their success in the marketplace. Windows versus the Mac OS. Microsoft Word, Microsoft Office versus WordPerfect and the Lotus products. And the Xbox versus PS2. It hasn't beaten the PS2, but it's become a very, very hot product. And they beat the PS3 to the market with the Xbox 360. Internet Explorer. I knew I was forgetting a big one. Internet Explorer versus Netscape. Microsoft has a very good track record of defeating other people in the marketplace. Do you have a sense of anything that's different about this scenario? Why is it that Microsoft isn't beating Apple in the marketplace, given its track record generally competing?
Well, that track record, if you look at it, a lot of that has to do with what they, the actual steps they took. And typically it was they bought the market or bought the competitor. And this is a really big market to try and buy. It's not like when Netscape was the reigning king. The whole internet and web browser thing was still kind of new, and it was a lot easier to buy and build the products that you needed to block Netscape from being able to do what they do. And a lot of those tactics that Microsoft used then, like let's force all of our partners to use Internet Explorer as the default browser on their PCs instead of Netscape, they can't pull a lot of those tricks anymore.
Now, I would actually like, just as a consumer, would like to see Microsoft release a fantastic product. I think it would make the music downloading marketplace a much happier place for consumers.
Sure.
It is very interesting to see how this works. And another issue here, let's actually change gears and talk about the iTunes Music Store itself for a little bit. Apple made a really big deal when it released iTunes about having exclusive content. They still do a lot of early releases. They bundle songs when they release albums, but they haven't had a lot of big marquee acquisitions in the recent past. How big of a deal is it that they now have this exclusive Beach Boys material and that Metallica is only selling their music online through iTunes?
I think that's a pretty big deal. As far as the Beach Boys go, this shows the power that Apple and iTunes wield in the marketplace. The Beach Boys, although I'm sure there are many people out there that would disagree, they're still a big name. And that's a pretty big feather in your cap to be able to say, yeah, we have this album exclusively. If you want it for the next few weeks, you got to come to us. That's a big thing.
The one other thing I wanted to mention, and I had a brain failure a moment ago, which is why I switched gears earlier than I meant to. The other thing that I wanted to ask you about Microsoft, in my reading of this, I mean, Microsoft is making a huge change in direction. They said, we supply the software, we supply Windows Media Player and the format and the DRM and everything else, the hardware and the rest of the user experience is up to third-party vendors, and that's how they tend to work. They say, we'll make the core technology, and we'll be very protective of it, and other people will do the rest of the work. They're changing gears now. They're talking about building the whole widget. That in and of itself, the change in direction, sounds to me like an admission of defeat, not just in the past, but it sounds like, I mean, they're no longer differentiating themselves from Apple's approach. And that seems like the greatest admission of defeat in this change.
You know, and I bet if you ask someone at Microsoft, they wouldn't say, oh no, this isn't defeat, we're changing with the market, which may very well be, but I bet if you go and ask any of their partners, and I'm doing the air quotes thing right now, their partners, they would have a very different view on it also, which is Microsoft isn't changing with the market. Microsoft has decided to screw us.
And now let's talk about those so-called partners of theirs. They're no longer just partners. They are partners. They are working with Microsoft's technology. They're also very much competitors now. Now, that's not unheard of in business. I mean, for example, Apple and Sony are partners in many software respects and competitors in many hardware respects. But this is a particularly stark situation where Microsoft has essentially said, "We're your competitors now. We're going to build your product and we're going to try and do it better than you." One of the things I'm wondering, you have to ask the question, where do Creative, ScanDisk, iRiver, Sony, where do they go if they decide, and we don't know that they will, but if they decide that Windows Media is not any longer an interesting format to them, where do they go?
Well, they go to something that Microsoft doesn't control. And I wouldn't blame them one bit for doing just that. What they need to do is look at something that's an open standard, like Ogvorbis or AAC, which actually is something Apple uses also.
Now, yeah. One of the things I'm mulling over is the idea: what if they got together, all these MP3 player manufacturers got together and said, you know what? Why don't we agree to support a standard together? Why don't we pick a standard, whether it's an open standard or maybe one of Sony's formats, but say pick AAC, for example, and say, well, why don't we develop our own DRM? All of our players will support this DRM. All of the music stores that we currently have partnerships will support this DRM. So the people that look like the controlling jerks who are holding on to their own DRM and their own formats are Apple and Microsoft, and we're going to become the voice of the industry. Do you think that has any merit as an idea?
I think that sounds absolutely fantastic. And I say all these little guys need to band together and go for it. And actually, they don't even need to create their own DRM. There are some open source DRM alternatives out there that they can take a look at. And off the top of my head, I can't remember the names of anything, but they are out there. So the tools are in place. They could create their own little consortium of music players and music services and do their own thing, which actually may be one of their only chances for survival now.
And one of the things that I'm thinking about when I look at this industry, there will come a day sooner or later when Apple and possibly Microsoft and some of the other people in this business, there will come a day when they make more money selling content, selling movies, music, TV shows, whatever, than they will selling the hardware, selling the iPods or the Zen players. That day will come. Right now, Apple makes its money selling hardware, but there will be a day when they make their money selling content. And if the rest of the industry had settled on AAC with, for example, an open source DRM on top, it wouldn't seem that unreasonable to me. This would probably be a day when Steve Jobs was no longer in control of Apple, but it would seem reasonable to me if Apple said, you know what? You guys are using AAC. We're using AAC. The only difference is the layer of DRM over the top. Maybe we'll adopt this open standard DRM, and they'll allow that stuff to play on everybody's players in order to remain the dominant marketplace.
I think the key phrase that you included in there was, and Steve Jobs is no longer the boss. So, sure, I can get something like that happening down the road. I think that's a long ways off still. But as the market changes and the whole technology that drives all of this evolves, sure, eventually things are going to have to change. And hopefully they will change for the better, at least from the consumer standpoint. and will become essentially more open as opposed to more restrictive.
All right, and one last question on this subject. Can Metallica fans finally forgive the band for being so bullheaded?
You know, that's kind of a personal question there, I suppose, for many people. And I'm thinking that there's a few that will proudly display their Metallica t-shirts again, and a few that maybe won't. But, you know, I'm willing to go ahead and let them slide on this one. Sometimes people just take a little bit longer to see the light.
All right, here. Switching gears. We talk a lot about products on this show. I do the product roundup all the time. And I really like to see Adam Engst and Jason Snell speak up and say, you know what, there's a product missing from the Mac software canon. You know, there's a major product that we have always wanted to see for this platform, and it doesn't exist, and we're going to try and push the creation of that kind of a piece of software. First of all, can you give listeners a sense of what a collaborative editor program is? What is this piece of software that they miss and they want to see?
Okay, what they want is an application that anyone that's working on a written project together, so for the sake of this argument, we'll call it an article that they're writing. They want to do is have something so that everyone that's involved in that article can work on it together, and it doesn't matter where you are, and that includes being able to track the changes, follow any revisions and other notes that are associated with that.
This is on the theory that track changes in Microsoft Word might not cut it, for example.
Yes, that would be a very strong theory here. Yeah, well, see, there's another problem with Microsoft Word, which is that if we want to work on a project together, we can't work on it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we happen to be together, sitting at the same computer, sharing the keyboard. And, you know, as sweet and wonderful as that sounds, I want to have my own keyboard.
Well, and you live in a different state. Let's play along with this game. Let's play along with this game. What applications do you think are missing from the Mac? Are there any applications that you really want to see people write?
Actually, this group editor application, I really want to see that. And it's one of those things that when Adam wrote his article for Tidbits saying, this is what we need, I did the forehead smack going, well, duh, I've been wanting this for so long. Why didn't I put the words together? Luckily, Adam did. So we need that. We also need something that allows us to have a really good, easy-to-use, stable information collaboration system, like for calendaring and email and contacts. What I'm picturing is something that Apple could like build into OS X Server, so that anyone that has a Mac, they can just fire up iCal, click the little button where it says, I want to be part of my local group information system. And then it just works. That's something else we really need.
I know that there are programs like that. Like, for example, I think Oracle makes one that I'm familiar with that we use at one of my other careers. We're using that in the office every day to schedule resources and manage time. And again, I assume that you're operating on the theory, for example, that Apple's iCal doesn't quite cut it.
Apple's iCal doesn't quite cut it. And I have this disease. And my disease is that I am I am quite literally obsessed with all of the different PIM applications that are out there.
That would be personal information management?
Exactly. So that would be like iCal and now UpToDate, now Contact and Daylight and Kronos Organizer, all those different programs. And I have yet to find one where I sit down and go, yes, this is it. This is the program that does what we really need the way we need it to work.
All right, so let that be a lesson to everyone out there. That's a program we still need on the Mac. That's going to have to do it for this week. Jeff, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thanks for having me back on.
If you have any questions or thoughts about the news, send them to me at roundup@macobserver.com. I offer you the product roundup. That was very enthusiastic. Apple officially announced the Bluetooth version of its Mighty Mouse on Tuesday. It costs $70. Memorex will ship iFlip, a portable iPod video player with an 8.4-inch LCD, in September. It features integrated speakers, a tilting iPod dock, and a rechargeable battery. Pricing will be $200. The Omni Group released a public beta of its new project management application, OmniPlan, on Wednesday evening. OmniPlan is designed to assist task management using visual timelines, resource allocation, NAT charts, budget tracking, and more. The OmniPlan public beta is free and available for download at the Omni Group website. It expires on August 26th. The final release will be priced at $150. Sonic Solutions announced on Tuesday that the CD and DVD creation application Toast 7 includes Blu-ray disc support. Blu-ray discs are capable of holding up to 50 gigabytes of data on a disc that is the same size as a standard DVD. In comparison, the DVD-R and RW discs available today can hold up to 4.7 gigabytes of information. And finally this week, Chris Berlick looks at the open-source racing game V-Drift. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the weekly roundup. I'm sorry that the last show didn't go up at the right time or get onto the feed at the right time. I will not do that this week. Of course, if I did, you wouldn't hear this until I fixed. Anyway, our content, as always, is written by the staff at TMO. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. And remember, the podcast and Portable Media Expo is coming up September 29th and 30th. Stay subscribed, everyone. Until next week, I will see you online.